your New England Revolution.
Hello, Calderon! Wow!
Join the conversation and sound off on tonight's win at 617-237-1234. And now, your host, live from Gillette Stadium, Tom Quinlan.
The boys are back in MLS Cup Finals. For the first time since 2007, the New England Revolution will play for MLS glory. Welcome to the show. How we doing, New England? New England defeats New York in the Eastern Conference Finals. And now, again, as I said, moves on to take on either L.A. or Seattle next Sunday from either L.A. or Seattle. So much to happen on the show today. A lot of time to do it. We're on for the next 90 minutes on 1510 WMEX. And we're taking your calls at 617-237-1234. The aggregate score finishes like this. New England, 4 goals. New York, 3 goals. Drama, intensity, excitement, and everything you would want and more for an Eastern Conference Finals battle. It's not just the fact that the Revs won this evening that you should be excited. As a soccer fan, as a fan of the sport, you were shown how good this sport can be in this country tonight when you have two historic teams in this league, in New England and New York. The teams didn't like each other this series, clearly. The fans didn't like each other. The coaches didn't like each other. And instead of having a sloppy series where it's chippy and there's cards galore, even though that's what the first game was like, you were treated to an absolutely, I thought, a sensational game here this evening at Gillette. And it finishes in a 2-2 draw. Would you have liked to seen the Revs win like they did against Columbus here in the Eastern Conference semifinals? Sure. But you know what? Beggars can't be choosers. You're in the MLS Cup Finals. You're Eastern Conference champions, again, for the first time since 2007. And now, you're going to start seeing everybody come out of the woodwork for this team. I'm Tom Quinlan. Kev Coleman, Cam Bartley, gentlemen that have been with me all season long, join me in studio. Scooby-Dooby-Doo, my man, Scooby Magaza. I call him that. He lets me get away with that, all right? Nobody else gets away with that. I do. He joins us as well. He's behind the glass. He'll be joining us on the program in just a minute. Brad Calandrella on the ones and twos, producing it live for you back in Quincy. It's the Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Post-game show on 1510 WMEX Papagayo's. Visit one of their 4 locations across the Metro Boston area today. And check out our friends in Somerville, 331 Great River Road. That's where we're going to be celebrating after tonight with the rest of you Revs fans. After, again, Charlie Davies' brace on the evening. He was the man of the match in the stadium. Most likely the man of the match on the Revs broadcast. Probably the national broadcast as well. And I said it in the press box, and I'm going to welcome in Cam and Kev here. He's got to be probably right now a front runner for the Eastern Conference's playoff MVP. Cam, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I mean, we were here in the studio. I forget who was saying it. I think it was Seth who...
Seth Maycomber.
Yeah, he stated 4 goals in the regular season and 4 goals in the playoffs. That's a stat that you rarely see.
That's astonishing.
That is absolutely... Speaking of stepping up big, Charlie Davies, hats off to you. You helped us get into the MLS Cup Final along with the rest of the 10 on the pitch.
I think next to Derek Jeter, he's Mr. November. I know that was thrown out. That was thrown out today. That was thrown out in the press box today, and I totally agree. He has stepped up huge for the Revs in this playoff run.
And it's not even just the goals, too. He had 4 goals in 4 games for the Revs. He also had an assist as well. So you're getting production from Charlie in multiple areas. I mean, it is a breath of fresh air. And now it is comforting to know, because you're going into a situation, either L.A. or Seattle, where both teams, you're going to be required to have an offensive game. And the one thing that's comforting to me from tonight is that you have a reason to believe that the Revs can compete with any team, whether it be L.A. or Seattle, offensively, defensively. And it's because of a guy like Charlie Davies that opens up the game for you like tonight. Because you got to remember, we're celebrating here. We're happy to see what the Revs have done with this season, salvaging a year where you lost 9 out of 10 in the middle of the summer, and now you're playing for an MLS Cup final. But tonight, the game was slow, and the Revs dug themselves out of a hole. That's another thing, too. They conceded first, and they were able to find themselves back in the game. They didn't roll over and die. They could have just gone down 1-0 and sat back and did the Jose Mourinho Chelsea tactics and parked the bus, quote-unquote, if you will.
Gross. Hate it.
Jay played the game attacking, and he did it the right way. Did not play afraid. And another thing, too, that was interesting, you didn't see Kellen Rowe come on until after the 75th minute with, you know, under about 10 minutes to go. And it's not like when that sub came on, it really affected the game. It helped. But the Revs, you know, Jay stuck with the guys that were out there. And I think it says a lot to Jay having the confidence to go as deep as he did with that starting 11, because, I mean, and both coaches, granted, Pecky didn't make a move either, but patience, I think, is a strong word to use here tonight. And sound off with us at 617-237-1234. But patience is the word that I would use here tonight that helped the Revs get over, because you believed in the system. And that is, listen, it's a cliche word. It's said a lot around here because people say, oh, that's their crutch word. Well, you see why tonight the system works. You see why tonight they stuck with their laurels.
And I mean, I totally agree. I think, you know, Jay played the right way. I think he played attacking, which was right. Smart. And look at it now. I mean, it worked. And I thought, you know, Charlie Davies really just lit the match for the Revs tonight, because Lee Wynn really couldn't do anything. They really shut him down, the Red Bulls. So hats off to them. They did a nice job of shutting down Lee Wynn, which is, you know, what the Revs relied on all year. But then you got Charlie Davies. You know, it's not like you just have Lee Wynn, who, you know, had some great chances today, but Charlie Davies really just, you know, lit the match for the Revs.
And I think at first we were questioning the decision of pushing Tierney up the pitch. We were like, oh, why would you drop Kellen? And right. Then it paid off. Clearly the services from Chris Tierney were phenomenal. It's what led to the second goal. It also established a defensive side on the left side. We were able to solidify a nice, solid defense throughout the forward all the way down through the midfield to the defense.
Yeah. And I thought Kevin Olsen played a good game.
Yeah,
you know, I was questioning a little bit, not going to lie, when the game was starting. I was a little nervous. But I thought he stepped up to the plate, and he played excellent today. And like you said, Tierney just had world-class, you know, set pieces into the box. Of course, one of them led to the Charlie Davies goal. So another great job by Chris Tierney tonight. So excellent, excellent job.
Yeah, but the management moves by Jay end up panning out. You know, right. We talked about it in the pregame that maybe start Diego in this situation. I was very – and I know that it's weird to say Diego's name, because – he's not a name that we've said much of since August. Since August, yeah. I mean, you wouldn't even say that you've heard Diego's name in September.
Right.
But, you know, I thought maybe Jay was going to try to go with a little more attacking. They decide to at least give a little bit more padding pressure on that side where, okay, Kevin gets beat, but we got another guy back there that can play that left-back role, and he can fill in that space. And, you know, the communication was much better tonight. I'm not going to say it was perfect for the Revs, but they were a little bit more, I think, consistent in how they handled the ball out of the back. It wasn't as frantic towards the end of the match as I thought it was last week in New York when these two teams played. 617-237-1234. Sound off with us now. Jay Heaps is going to get to the press conference table in a little bit. Scooby's watching in the back. Scooby, you got a thumbs up back there? There you go. All right.
I think also, Tom, sorry to cut you off.
No, you're good.
There is holes in this. It wasn't a perfect performance.
No, absolutely not. No.
He got the job done, yeah, but Tim Cahill was a problem tonight. You saw him, as I said earlier, he's classic move, and what made him famous is how he's able to play off a defender's weak shoulder, their blind shoulder. Jogo got caught ball watching a few times, and so did AJ. And Tim Cahill had that one chance in the second half with a beautiful ball from Thierry Henry. And we were lucky to get away with one there.
Yeah.
And honestly, I believe that Tim Cahill caused more problems for us than Bradley Wright Phillips did. And if Bradley was in the game, we might not be in the MLS Cup right now.
Right.
So
I mean,
they would have had them both up top. Yeah. And that would have been a huge, huge trouble for us. But in the end, New England did what they had to do. And honestly, they do need to figure it out. Jogo and AJ still need to figure it out a bit because they're going to be facing either Giassi Zardes, Donovan, and Robbie Keane, or the likes of Oba and Clint Dempsey. So they've got some work to do. A little more communication. That's what I think it is, and less ball watching.
I think we have to also give – I'm sorry, Cam. No, go ahead.
No, I was going to agree with Cam. You know, ball watching, me and Cam both commented it, during the game, and he almost led – Tim Cahill to have one of those, that would have been an amazing, volley into the back net. But he got caught ball watching several times.
So you have that. And I just want to real quick before we go to the phones, because the phone lines are open now at 617-237-1234. You got to give credit to New York. I know we're sitting here today. We have every single reason to be crediting New England with this win. This is the New England Revolution postgame show, sure. But you have to look at the body of work that New York has put together over the last several months. They were a team that played in the knockout round. They had to reinvent themselves towards the end of the season, essentially. This was a team that played with multiple men up top. They converted to a 4-2-3-1, a similar formation that New England plays, two holding midfielders. You took Thierry Henry, who's a guy that naturally plays up in a much more advanced position, dropped back a little bit, and you were successful. You were able to knock off Sporting Kansas City. You were able to knock off DC United, who multiple times in the past had knocked you off in the playoffs. It just wasn't enough for New York, and I think it's nothing to be ashamed of. They just ran into a very hot New England team. They are just they fell into a matter of circumstance that almost every other team has fallen into this year. Again, 617-237-1234. Brad, you said that's Greg in the car right now? Brad?
It's Greg in the car.
Greg, there we go. Greg in the car, let's take him.
How you doing, guys? I'm in the car with my brother and my dad. We just came back from the game. Absolutely great game. The atmosphere was tremendous. Really excited to see them in the Cup. It was freezing, though, I'll tell you that, but I don't think it stopped anybody from coming to the stadium. It was the biggest turnout I've seen for a Revs game in a long time.
And actually, I think, I forget what the final attendance was, but they said that
it was record.
It was record-breaking for MLS, Revolution home game, playoff game.
Yeah, because the entire lower, deck was all filled up, and we were in the second deck, but absolutely great game. I know you guys said Lee wasn't really kept in the game too much, but we were really impressed. He was just all over the field. I mean, maybe he didn't get too many touches, but it was just ridiculous. He was back and forth. So just wanted to say that.
Absolutely a great point. We don't want to take anything away from Lee here. Yep. Here, I think the thing here is, and before we let you go, Greg, I got this point. You let me know what you think about this. I think the thing that gets us all up in arms about Lee is that offensive production that you get in the middle of the field. And tonight, the Revs were forced to get goals from different areas. I mean, I think a lot of the majority of the success that New England has gotten is to come straight down the spine. It was the center backs. Then it was your holding midfielders and Jones and Caldwell. Then you had Lee. And then you had Charlie Davies to finish it off, the cherry on top. And you had to make adjustments. And the Revs were able to work themselves through that adjustments tonight and find success out on the wings. And to be honest, they've found success out on the wings all playoffs. And, you saw them have that similar success earlier in the year when they were winning five straight. So it's all good stuff for the Revs, man. Anything else?
That's it, man. Thanks. Good stuff.
617-237-1234. Let's go to the Twitter boards right now. You can join the conversation on the Twitter as well, at Podcast Invaders. This one's Paulo, a faithful listener who's been great all year long. Paulo says, New York was very strong. Absolutely agree there. Quote, we may have very well just not only took the conference trophy from them, but an MLS Cup potentially. And I said it earlier. This is a New York team, a New England team. And thank you very much, Paulo, for the hit up. Very faithful. Guy doesn't miss the show. The one thing that you feel right now is that Are the Revs really the strongest team in this playoffs left? It's more than just, okay, we're in the same you're in the same boat now as the other teams. I think you've separated yourselves from Seattle. You've separated yourselves from LA. Yeah, they're great teams, but you're unique. The Revs have a unique playing style that Seattle or LA is going to have to figure out, and they only have a week's time to do it. 617-237-1234. Adams and Quincy, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, guys? First of all, you guys do a great job this year. Keep up the good stuff.
Thanks, Adam.
Thank you.
Just to comment on that last call, I think you hit it on the head to an extent. I think Lee Wynn wasn't as involved tonight, but I think that's a good thing because I think New York was probably keying in on him and his offensive production. So it's really nice to see other players step up and kind of handle the work. But I think that's great moving forward because now I think, you know, regardless of whether we play L.A. or Seattle, I think a lot of people are going to realize that you can't just key in on one guy on this team. This team is, you know, Jay Heaps and the powers that may be in New England have done a great job building this team from the ground up, kind of, especially with all these young players and stuff like that. I just thought everybody across the board played well, and you know, everybody here in New England's looking forward to the final.
Yeah, first time since 2007 since the Revs taking the Eastern Conference, five-time now Eastern Conference champions. So funny just to say those words this year. I mean, let me ask you, Adam, how did you feel in the middle of the summer when this team lost 9 out of 10 games and there wasn't any signs on the horizon that there would be any changes, at least in the imminent future? And, I mean, they shocked all of this region by signing the hottest player on the U.S. this World Cup in Jermaine Jones. They find the consistency that vaunted them in the middle of the summer. I mean, what did you think, Adam, before this whole run began?
I mean, myself, along with probably many of the Revs fans that, you know, that follow on an everyday basis. I mean, the concern was, I know in the beginning everybody wanted a DP, just, you know, kind of the bright lights of having a designated player. But I think the Revolution did a great job of kind of being patient and picking which designated player they selected and signed. And I think, you know, Jermaine Jones is that missing piece that New England had in kind of defensive midfield role. Something solid. He can go forward. He can go back. He could relieve pressure from everybody else on the team. So, but to answer your question, you could ask any Revs fan. Really, we're a little worried just because, you know, that long losing streak. But you know, the Revolution, the staff, the players, you know, they've all stepped up and they've proved a lot of people wrong and a lot of people in the country wrong. So it's awesome. It's a beautiful thing to see, and it's great for soccer in New England. So.
Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Adam. Get home safe.
And Tom, touching back on what Adam was talking about, I think the reason why people were kind of like up in arms about Lee Wynn in the last two games is because you expect a goal from him every single game because of his performances. And when he doesn't get on the score sheet, people are all...
MV Lee.
Yeah, question marks. It's like, what is he... But in all honesty, every touch he had today was positive. Everything he did was connecting and combining and creating offensive opportunities, even though they were limited, yes, because he's going to be doubled. And Adam brings up another great point, is that now teams are going to have to look at other weapons. Teal Bunbury is something you need to watch out for on the wing. Kellen Rowe will come in the MLS Cup, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
He'll be a huge factor. And now Charlie Davies is getting back to that world, that team international USA form that he saw pre-accident, which was very unfortunate, but Charlie Davies is now a huge weapon, and we were talking earlier this season, when is he going to show up? When is he going to be in form? When is he going to be introduced?
The best time possible best time for that possible. Man to show up.
Mr. November, I guess, right?
That's right. That's right.
I like that, Kev, yeah.
Mr. November in MLS, at least.
Yeah, tell New York that. Tell the Red Bulls that. Yeah, they'll like that.
They're having a long ride home. I'll tell you what, though. Got to give credit to those Red Bull fans tonight. They're crazy.
But we got snow thrown at us. It was a little rough.
So did Kellen. They threw one at Kellen, and then Kellen's just bowing in front of him and blowing
them
kisses. Thank you.
Yes.
This is my cup now. Thank you.
I'm going to Seattle and to play in my hometown. It felt like a European game tonight, didn't it? From the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
The play on the field. It felt right. It felt like this is where we're supposed to be. Like. the fireworks, the drama, the
chippiness,
the chippiness. Yeah. the awe, the walkouts, the storylines. Henri, who might have just played his last game ever, the legend who tore it up for your Arsenal Gunners,
I'll shed a tear if you keep going this way.
one of the finest footballers in the world. You have that on showcase here tonight, and you know, it's not the same storyline. It's the new kids on the block. The Red Bulls had their opportunity in the past to win MLS glory, and they had their opportunity plenty of times with Thierry Henry. It's unfortunate they couldn't get it done, but it goes back to New York now. You know, the storylines that exist. One, do you blame Mike Petke for not being more aware of Bradley Wright Phillips' situation? Two, did you really have the strongest 11 out there against this New England team? Or did you have the best formation out there? A lot of questions are going to come down on this New York franchise. There's a lot of uncertainty in the future with this New York team. A lot of credit for the way they finished. They were one of the strongest and hottest teams at the end, even though they finished at the bottom of the table. But with the way that this Eastern Conference Finals went, and I was watching Mike Petke applaud the fans after the game, he knows. I think he lets one slip away here tonight.
And you know what else he said? You know, he was applauding the fans, but he said, get everyone out here. Get all the players out here. He wanted everyone to come out and applaud, you know, the great crowd that came from New York. That was excellent.
I know
everyone was commenting about it, and they did a very nice job. It was, I thought, how many people do you think they brought? Like 1,000?
A little over a thousand.
Yeah. And you know, also, not to give, we gotta give credit to the Fort tonight. They were phenomenal.
Like we said, the atmosphere, it was built the way a playoff game should have been. 617-237-1234. A lot of fans heading to their cars. We're on till 7 o'clock on the Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar, New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WMEX. We got to go to a break in a little bit. Scooby sitting behind the glass. We're still waiting to hear from Coach Jay Heaps, who, gosh, I mean,
they're probably celebrating in
the locker
room.
They're celebrating like crazy right now. I mean, you know what? They have a right to. I mean, this was a team that, at the end of it, what is it now? 13 wins in the last since August. Can you look that since the Toronto game? Let's see what it was.
Since they acquired Jones, I think they're 12-1-1 or 13-1-1.
They only lost one game with Jones,
And they've tied this is their second tie.
It would be like 12-2-1 with 12 wins, two ties, and one loss,
right.
I believe. So I mean, phenomenal. Jermaine Jones clearly a huge factor,
but he wasn't everything. That's the thing people are never going to realize about this year. Or at least if you didn't pay attention and you don't actually know the story about this Revs team, it wasn't all about Jermaine.
Right.
Love the guy. The guy's a great guy. Enforcer. Brought an identity to this team. It wasn't all about Jermaine.
And here's the thing. Great players make other players great around them. That's what
Charlie
Jermaine
Davis.
Jones has done. Yeah, he's his level of play has amplified his teammates' level of play to a whole nother level. Because they say, hey, look, we've got a world-class player by our side. We need to play world-class as well. So that's what Jermaine Jones has brought to our table, and it's just phenomenal. And also, this game, this series right here has completely brought the New York-New England rivalry to a whole new level.
Oh, yeah.
A whole new level. It's now, we can consider it a derby match now, because after this playoff series, there will be hatred next year. Pure hatred for the two teams, and it was a very chippy two matches.
Absolutely. I mean, it's unfortunate. Again, you know, the talent that New York could be losing this summer, it is unfortunate because you have an aging Henri that's on his way out. Cahill, there's the uncertainty behind him. Olave, does he come back? I mean, does New York financially, are they able to bring back a team that can even compete against New York City FC? Because we haven't even weighed that factor yet. I mean, if there was any year to grab that city's attention in that soccer market, which was hungry and starving for anybody just to grab it, New York Red Bulls lost their ticket big time tonight to grab a full attention of the New York market. You know what New York is thinking right now? Let's look forward to New York City FC.
Exactly.
Let's look forward to the Cosmos. The Red Bulls are not a historic franchise. Did a lot to build a soccer culture in this area.
Metro Stars.
Metro Stars to the Red Bulls to what are they going to be next? That's the problem. They're heading down, I'm not saying they're Chivas, but they're heading down that road where they might have to go away for a couple years, or they're going to lose a lot of money, and they could take a hit in their fan department.
Will they be overshadowed? That's the big question.
I think overshadowed. That's a perfect way of putting it. Thank you.
I think they will. Just on a personal standpoint, I think they will. I think there's so much buzz going around New York City about the new club. So I think NYCFC is going to be a huge buzz all throughout New York, even not through the city, through the state. And it's a big state. So I think it's going to be a huge buzz. They're playing Yankee Stadium. They've already got a lot of ticket sales already. Season ticket holders, everything.
DPs.
Exactly. They had the players, David Villa, Frank Lampard. They have everything in place. So I think the Rebels were, maybe a few inches short tonight of maybe going to the, MLS Cup.
And one little quick point, too. Financially, New York Red Bulls are going to be struggling to compete, too. They wanted to win this MLS Cup so they could get the income to compete with their neighbors.
Yeah.
And that's just huge for them right there.
And it's unfortunate for New York tonight, but, where New York missteps, New England moves forward.
Exactly.
And it's on to the West Coast. Will it be L.A.? Will it be Seattle? We're talking about this all night tonight with you on the New England Revolution post-match show presented by Papagayo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Still waiting for the coach, Jay Heaps, to get to the press conference table. We'll probably have that after the top of the hour. Real quick, Justin Churchill, who will be on this show as well this evening, said that Henry's post-game comments, short, sweet, and it was this. Quote, "Well done, New England."
Fair.
He's
class. That's what he is.
He's a class guy. Yeah. Very classy.
He's an Arsenal man.
Yeah, this one comes from Matthew Levine, too. As media gather around, Henry's keeping it short, says, "Well done, New England," and walks away. So he doesn't even want to acknowledge, because I think he even knows where this is going. But we'll have more reaction on the night. 617-237-1234. A break and many more surprises on the way on the New England Revolution post-match report, only on 1510 WMEX.
Tierney's cross.
And then I liked that we were able to get a set piece goal. That was something we worked on all week, that exact play. It was actually a very similar play we ran in New York, and we missed the chance. And so we knew that there was going to be some space in that area, and we were able to hit on it, which is, I think, you get in moments in a game where you need to find a goal, knowing that you've worked on certain set plays and certain things that you know are going to work. That gave our guys a little bit of energy, and then Charlie finished off, two great chances.
Your impression of Henry his last game, possibly, and tactically moving Kevin Austin to that side.
Well, Kevin was on the left, on Sam, and Farrell was matched up with Henry. And I thought Andrew did an unbelievable job tonight. I thought he was really good. But Thierry, even after the game, just his class and coming over and congratulating us and the manner in which he did it. You look at a player like that, and I said it last week, seeing Jermaine and him play against each other was special, being a lifetime MLS guy. But seeing him tonight on the turf, everyone talked about it, and he didn't miss a beat. He was himself and created a lot of what they got. I mean, that first goal was just – I don't think anyone can hit that ball the way he hit it to Cahill. And some of his touches out there were pretty, pretty amazing.
Coach, congratulations. Everybody played a great game. Who did you give the game ball to?
I had to give it to Charlie, and I'll tell you why. We were hard on Charlie this week. We thought in New York, he always plays hard, but he didn't find the right angles, the right gaps. And this week we were asking a little bit more of him. And even yesterday, I got on him in training because I thought he was, the cold weather on his body hurts him, and he was kind of taking it light. And I really wanted to see him get up to where he was tonight. And I thought today, from the opening whistle, the number of times he got behind their back line early, and then the two chances, Charlie Davies can score. And I think that when he gets in those areas, he's going to put them away.
It was actually Tierney that started
the second goal, yeah, and the set piece, yeah. Tierney did a great job.
Jay, last year you brought Charlie in, and he sounds like he would do well in training, but could struggle to get minutes. But you brought him back in this year, similar. He struggled to play, then you gave him a chance. Can you talk about his just kind of perseverance in that, and then Did that make you want to bring him back this year, even though he didn't really
– Well, to be honest with you, last year when we brought him, we knew we were going to keep him around. It was never – I really felt that Charlie was – you know, after coming back and returning from D.C., and then he was going, then he was back and forth and went to France for a little bit and then and was moved to another club. And so I think for Charlie, he needed to get somewhere and just get into a culture of a club and just be like, okay, this is, because Charlie's personality, it makes him who he is. And if he's always constantly moving around, I don't think he can become the player he wants to be. So I knew we were going to keep him last year. Even though he wasn't playing, I told him, look, the next – you're not – 2013 really may not be your year. 2014 is going to be your year. And so we talked a lot in the offseason about the way he was going to come in, and he came into preseason flying and picked up a hamstring injury, and it really set him back. So I credit Charlie on all of it. I think we gave him a stable environment, but – he was fighting for his position every day from when his injury happened through this entire 2014 to the point where when he did get his chance, the staff was rooting for him, the entire team was rooting for him, and I think that he's been the inspirational guy that that when he did get his chance, you could see guys rooting for him. And it was in Dallas where he got his first start, and then as the season went on after that, you could see him taking more minutes, getting more starts, and every time he started, the team wanted to be, you know, wanted to help him play better. And I think that that's, you know, a pretty amazing story.
And two more questions.
Both goals came from assisted and scored by players who grew up here locally in New England. There are others who are on the team who grew up around here. Talk about how that makes an achievement like this unique for the team, that you have so many local guys and in front of another playoff attendance record tonight.
Yeah, I think it's a special night. You know, I think those guys are, you know, even Scott Caldwell I thought was just pretty amazing. And, you know, we have a lot of our aggression and the way we play, you know, kind of stems from, you know, kind of a New England culture. You know, I was born and raised here, and I think we want that, because when you get into the trenches and you get into the battles, I really feel that that's an advantage for us. And I love having guys out there that have that character and know that who they are.
Andrew.
Four MLS coaches.
Hi, Andrew. Hey, what's up?
As a player with this team, now you've brought him there as a coach. What do you feel on a day like this when you see a packed stadium and you see your players celebrating and running around? What's that feeling?
It's pretty special, because it wasn't easy. You know, I think I was talking to someone out on the field, and you know, day one, Remy Roy, my goalkeeper coach and assistant coach now, we rolled our sleeves up in November 2011 and really wanted to build something that would, you know, championship worthy, and to get back to where the club was in 05 and 06 and 07. So it's been a lot of sleepless nights. It's been a lot of hard work. So there's a reward in getting there. But I think that, you know, for us, the ultimate is getting that ring. And for me, that's what this is all about, getting the Kraft family and how amazing they've been, not only me as a soccer player, as a player here, but now as a coach, getting them, you know, the due ring. They deserve it, and we want to get it for them.
Matt, and then the last one.
Yeah, you guys were pretty tough through the midfield today. You've already touched on Caldwell's performance. Can you talk about the midfield as a whole between Lee, Jermaine, and Scotty, to be able to kind of bunch up the middle and make it hard to get through?
Yeah, you know, to be fair, I thought their midfield was excellent in the first half, and I thought we were a little bit second. So at halftime, I had a pretty stern talk with our midfield to say, hey, you guys are what got us here, and you guys are what are going to make this thing happen in the second half. And I thought Lee's performance in the second half, and I don't think he took a foot wrong in that second half. Working second balls, we asked him to do that in the second half, and he did everything. And I thought Jermaine, the same thing. I mean, he had a look in his eye that said, not tonight. And that's why we didn't make many changes, and we wanted to keep it the same way. The only change we made was bringing Kellen on, and you know, I thought that was at the right time, was to get a little bit of fresher legs up there that could extend the field.
Last question right here, then we'll have our locker room open.
Over 32,000 fans tonight. Last time you played in a conference championship, it was a fraction of that. What does that say about, you know, where the soccer culture and support has come from, you know, over the years, and what did that do for the team?
Hey, yeah. I mean, I think the last one was when Taylor had the bicycle kick, and you know, to pretty, you know, it was a quiet crowd. I remember that. But yeah, I just think that, you know, I think our fans are amazing to continue to come out. I think they bought into what we were trying to do. The energy, and it kind of feeds on itself. I think that knowing that there's going to be a big crowd makes more people want to come out, and being a part of the Fort is exciting now, and it carries throughout the entire stadium. So Those are what you're trying to do with the leagues. You're trying to have these environments where you go in and there's an atmosphere and it's an event. And I think we're starting to get that here. Even 30,000 people tonight, you know, I don't think anyone sat down. It was an exciting game.
All right. Thank you, guys. Let Jay get out.
All right, that's Jay Heaps at the Papagallo's press conference table. Papagallo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar, again, sponsoring Jay's thoughts right there. And, yeah, it's a little bit different from 2007, from when this guy was playing on the field to now, where he's coaching the team and leading them to the MLS Cup Finals to either face L.A. or Seattle in either L.A. or Seattle, as New England defeats the New York Red Bulls on aggregate 4-3. We're on till 7 o'clock on the Papagallo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar press post-game show. So I'm Tom Quinlan, Kev Coleman, Cam Bartley just ran to the locker rooms. They just opened up, so we'll get some thoughts from them there. So you know what? Let's take a break. We'll send it back to Brad. When we come on back, let's get your thoughts on the night as well. 617-237-1234. 617-237-1234. Hit us up on Twitter at Podcast Invaders. A lot of stuff on the table. Revs, Eastern Conference champions. First time since 2007. Let the celebration begin.
Welcome to 1-855-ZQIL. We're committed to help you get your Z's. Simply choose your favorite way to be gently bored to sleep. Press 1 for somebody else's family tree. Press 2 for Schedule A of a standard rental lease. Press 3 for the Jefferson High School graduating class of 1978.
I now present to you the Jefferson High School graduating class of 1978. Sabrina Abiancar, Christy Adima, Raul Agarwal.
If you're still awake after that mind-numbing drivel, perhaps you need some ZQIL after all. Nighty-night.
Alexandra Andrail.
Welcome back to the New England Revolution post-match report presented by Papagallo's Mexican Kitchen and Tequila Bar. Visit one of their four locations across the metro Boston area today and visit their menu online now. That's papagallosboston.com. That's P-A-P-A-G-A-Y-O boston.com. New England Revolution 2014 Eastern Conference champions. And we're live from Gillette, and we're taking your calls at 617-237-1234. Brad Calandrella on the ones and twos, producing it live for you. And Cam Bartley behind the glass with us. Scooby and Kev getting some sound from you in the locker rooms. And, you know, Cam, I just got out of the locker rooms. I took a quick stroll down there.
Champagne party?
Champagne party.
Ah.
Smell it, for sure. And, you know, you feel relieved that it's over. Right? I mean, you're happy. You're definitely thrilled to see how far this team has come this year, but...
I'm thrilled that it's not over.
We're thrilled that it's not over. But, like, the only reason... I mean, maybe thrilled isn't the right expression here, but, like... You feel exonerated in a way a little bit.
Yeah.
Is that the word I'm looking for? Because this was a team, as we've been saying all night, they lost 9 out of 10 in the middle of the summer. How do you come back from that?
You pick up Jermaine Jones. We always say that, but no, honestly, like I said before, a great player makes other players great around him, and that's what Jermaine's done. And as much as you can say, oh, New England, you're nothing without Jermaine, yeah, well, guess what? New York, you're nothing without Thierry Henry or Bradley Wright Phillips or Tim Cahill or the other 7 DP players, I'm exaggerating, of course, that you have. We picked up 1 DP, and we had an MVP candidate make himself. He made his own identity this year, and that's something to be so proud of with this New England team. As Adam, our caller, said in, built it basically from the ground up. And what Brian Bilillo and this whole entire organization has done is absolutely phenomenal.
Well, Adam said it, and Jay said it too. You know, mm-hmm. it started back in 2011 with his goalkeeping coach. And his goalkeeping assistant coach, Remy Roy, and they were just like, listen, there was a lot of sleepless nights here. You know, there was a lot of times where, you know, we're adjusting, and this has been a 3-year project. You could compare it a little to something like maybe like Sporting Kansas City without the rebrand per se. You know what I mean? Like you can and you know it's not to the same effect yet because you haven't won an MLS Cup yet, but. You've won with American talent. You didn't have to break the bank like LA did to win. So you've put yourself in a position where you're unique and you have a system that's respectable and it's different and it's a winning solution. You know, I mean, you can really credit the way for the one thing that you can't say bad about this Revs team is how they draft. Because if anything tonight, their draft picks, almost not all of them, Andrew was the biggest one of them all tonight to really put himself on display. Maybe Scott, too. But, like, those guys, huge pieces. Then you said you throw in the Jermaine Jones cam and you mix in Lee Wynn. It's unreal how it came together at the end. And, you know, a guy that I welcome in Justin Churchill of Goal.com and New England Soccer Today. You know, it's something we talk about all the time. I mean, it's just like... It might not have been the prettiest of systems. It might not have been built up the way that every other team that has won in the past has done it. But it's worked, and it's gotten them to this point.
It's I like to refer to as Moneyball. That's really what it is. It's kind of Moneyball. I mean, this year they did go out and spend money on Jermaine Jones. But essentially, if you think about it in that way, aside from that, they built the whole team on a very low salary. And that's the difference between this team and a team like New York, who, yes, they have the Thierry Henry and the Tim Cahill, but if you look at their role players, they're just not as good as the New England role players, and that's the difference.
And I think you can also maybe take a look at coaching staff. I mean, you look at this battle between Mike Petke and Jay Heaps, and Jay Heaps is definitely, at least in the postseason, he gotten the best of them. And the way Heaps has developed his players, he has a no-tolerance policy. And you see a player like the like of Diego Fagundes, who hasn't provided that much in the latter half of this season, and he benches him. And he proves a point to everyone else, and that's why Heaps' system will work, because he has no tolerance. If you're not performing, then you're going to sit down on the bench, and you're going to have to keep working your butt off to get in that starting 11.
The perfect point, I think, to really and build on that even more is something that Jay just said in the press conference. And Justin, you were just sitting there as we were listening to it. He was particularly hard on Charlie Davies the last couple of days.
He's kind of a coach, and while that is working for him now, sometimes it can hurt him, I think, because he's very emotionally invested in the game. That's his thing. You can always tell when things are going bad for him, they're going really bad. When things are going good, you'll have games like tonight. And I didn't see him going too crazy on the sideline. I didn't see him getting – he was very level-headed in the press conference. He gave credit where credit was due for New York. But he's maybe has found his, like, inner peace or something. I don't know. It seems like he's a kind of a coach that is very emotional, but that can be good sometimes, emotional investment.
I look at coaches like Petke and Heaps, and you see the emotions because they're so fresh off their playing careers, too, I believe. They still feel like they're on the field. And when you look at older managers and other teams, they're not as emotionally invested. They're much more nonchalant on the sideline. They let their players play. But in a sense, that's good for our team because we've got a bunch of young talent coming up, and that's what you want is to learn from a player like Jay Hoops, who's just gotten off the MLS, and you learn from somebody with experience.
They're organic coaches. I think that's a word, and maybe that's not the right, and correct me if I'm wrong, Justin, but I'm using the word organic for this pure reason. Sure, they don't have the proper coaching titles and the proper coaching licenses, you know, that you would see like a college-level coach or a guy that worked himself up through the ranks did. I mean, Jay was a guy that was in the broadcast booth the year prior and came onto the field, and now 3 years later has put this team into MLS Cup Finals. Astounding. You know, it there's no set way on how to win in MLS. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say here. You know, these guys have you know, brought a particular fire and a particular intensity that has made it exciting to watch on the field, but I don't think what they've done either coach or either organization for that matter defines how you can win in this league. It's a way, but it's not gospel.
Yeah, I mean, you look at one of their two likely. I mean, obviously, both of them are gonna whoever they're gonna play. Look at those two teams. Those two teams are set up completely different ways from coaches. Bruce Arena never played soccer. He played lacrosse, I think. And Siggy Schmidt, well, I don't know when he was playing soccer last, but he's got quite the pot belly there. And you look and you see those players, those teams are more dynamic-based. There's less emotion in that. And then when things go bad for those teams, it comes in less streaky of a situation. It comes less streaky for them. It's less about bad luck. It's more about this is the way I've been doing things for 20 years, and this is how I'm going to do it. And they do adjust to the times. I'll give them that. But you look at Bruce Arena, his coaching style, it really doesn't change. It hasn't changed too much since 2002, if you look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that when you look at the Seattle Sounders and the LA Galaxy, you can kind of compare them to the New York Red Bulls. So if New England are able to stick to this game plan that they stuck to, it's pretty – I would say it's like gritty soccer with – flares of brilliance, almost. They're able to grind out wins and grind out 50-50 challenges. The physical game doesn't really affect them at all. And if they can bring that same exact mentality that they did against New York in these last two legs, they'll have a lot of success in the MLS Cup.
617-237-1234. Let's get the thoughts of the players on the evening. Let's welcome in first. We have Sound from Teal Bunbury here, who gave his thoughts on the Revs advancing to MLS Cup Finals.
Your whole career playing big games like this, and if you can't enjoy it, then there's no point in playing it. So I feel that we got to go in there and have fun, but we're just very excited.
Talk about going up against Henry and potentially his final game and just the challenge he posed for you guys this series.
I mean, he's a legend. He makes things happen, and he did today again. He's one of the best of all time for me, the best of all time, and it was a pleasure playing against him, and credit to him for having such an extraordinary career, and all the best in whatever's next for him.
How easy is it, or difficult is it, to kind of have that mindset to where you guys are able to be resilient enough to overcome those two?
You got that at the perfect time because that's when I actually walked away from interviewing Teal.
Right.
So, congrats on that. I didn't hear the end of the interview because I was walking into here.
What do you think about the way Teal played tonight?
I thought he played well. People say, he plays like kind of like a winger role, but really he plays kind of like a withdrawn forward type of role. And you don't think of it because he's so wide. But that's what Heaps wants. So it's a very lopsided formation that they do. Yeah, he comes back sometimes, but yeah, he's still creative. I thought, crossing again, that could be something that they worked on. I think he definitely wasn't the worst one out there crossing. I think Farrell had a kind of a rough game with that in terms of that. I think defensively, this team needs to play tip-top shape next week because what I saw out there defensively for both teams would not win the MLS Cup, in my opinion.
Especially with the attack that you have coming from both LA and Seattle. I mean, you think New York has got a really good scoring team. I mean, if you haven't been paying attention to LA and Seattle, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Exactly. And to add to that point, the offenses are good, but the defenses of Seattle and LA are much better than what you're going to see against New York. So you're probably going to get a tighter game. Whereas, New York's defense was not very good, so New England was, easily able.
And they were
easy.
Missing Roy Miller.
Exactly. So they were able to come back in because New England does have a good offense. We'll all give them credit that, and they have a great midfield. That's where the game's going to be won between that. Who's going to score more goals? And, on paper, to me, it looks like Seattle and L.A. are have that advantage defensively.
It's perfect because you have it's the perfect segue, too, here, because we'll listen to Chris Tierney's thoughts in a second. But you think about Chad Marshall, who was just named MLS Defender of the Year for Seattle. And then you think about what else that Seattle has with future Tottenham star DeAndre Yedlin. And then you look at the other side with L.A., you got A.J. De La Garza. You got Omar Gonzalez. You know what I mean? And then on top of that, both teams have world-class players that can attack and hurt you in so many different ways. So both teams have to be ready for next week. What we got Red Bull glasses here? Are they
read it. What does it say? It says, thanks, L.D.
Thanks, L.D. Jeez. Oh. Hold on. Let me get you there. That's on me. Yep.
I do think, though, the one thing that will play to the advantage is the Revolution midfield, especially in the center of the park. The combination between Lee, Scott, and Jermaine is the chemistry has been phenomenal in the last 15-odd games, including the playoff run.
Right.
And if they can keep this chemistry together and not be disrupted by the likes of whoever they face in L.A. and Seattle, that's what's going to be play to their advantage. And yes, they do need to tighten up defensively. Jose Goncalves and AJ Soares were caught ball watching countless times. Tim Cahill was a nuisance today, and he could have had two or three more goals.
Yeah.
So that's something to work on training. And as long as our midfield stays healthy and Kellen Rowe's back at 100% for the next game, then I think that's what's going to play to our advantage.
Stay with the defense, though. Let's get Chris Tierney's thoughts on the evening.
Leaves gaps behind. It's not all about defending, which I think we could take advantage of. So credit to Jay for the tactical switch today. I thought, you know, you put Kevin on one-on-one. I don't think anyone in this league is getting by Kevin Alston one-on-one. So I think we adjusted well to it, and obviously it worked out for us.
What does it say about the team who's on to come back from the full times they scored?
Yeah, it got dicey there. You know, it was credit New York. You know, they played a good game. They had to throw numbers forward. They had to score goals, and they did. So they made it really tough for us. But you know, I think we've just, in these last few weeks, we've just found ways to get results. It hasn't always been the prettiest, but we're finding ways to get results. And, you know, there's no style points in this game. It's all about getting results, and we're in the final. So we're proud of that, and we're excited for the opportunity.
There we go.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
I think he thinks it's about getting results. I think he said that three times.
It doesn't matter how you win.
Just get the result.
Just get the result.
It's true. It's playoffs. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be pretty.
But when you want a little bit more.
I like tonight. I thought tonight was great. I didn't think it was ugly.
No?
Yeah, I thought it was a good game. I thought it was fantastic as a neutral. It was a fantastic game.
What would lead people to believe otherwise then?
Well, I think being that it's the MLS Cup, maybe they're a little tighter. New England doesn't play tight when they need to play tight, like everyone expects them to now. It's a different thing. I mean, he went out and he attacked because I think Heaps knows, you know, his defense isn't up to snuff this year. So he goes out and he attacks because, you know, you put the numbers up. Well, it's okay if you concede a couple, if you score a couple. And I think that was their mentality tonight. They went down. They still they scored the next goal. I think at the one point where, what was it? It was 2-1. At one point,
right.
Red Bulls,
right.
They were still, it was 1-1, and they were still pressing super high. And like
you said it in the press box, they're going to get caught out of position one time.
Yeah, and they were still pressing, and going for that next goal. So that just shows their mentality.
Oh, sorry about that again.
And I think that in this leg is much more of the football that we expected between these two teams. In the first leg, it was a lot more chippy, a lot more physical. Of course, the refereeing was obviously a bit of an issue. But in this game, they were allowed to play more. There was more free-flowing style of play between New York and New England. And it was a much more entertaining soccer that we wanted to watch, and the atmosphere built on top of that as well. So I think that today in New England, everyone was treated for something very special, and that's what we wanted to see.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly put, Cam. 617-237-1234. Let's take one more break, and then we'll stay commercial-free until 6:58 this evening when we will sign off the air from Gillette Stadium. The Revs are going to the MLS Cup Finals. Who are they going to face, L.A. or Seattle? We'll talk about their possible opponents coming up next. It's the New England Revolution post-match report live from Gillette Stadium. Back with more after this.
It straddles the line between timeless classic and modern luxury.
The grape tomato.
The ruby red in a sea of greens. The muse behind the great chef, Boyardee.
Beefaroni, mi amore.
Oh, tomato. Are you fruit? Are you vegetable?
What is identity?
Groceries, essentials, signature value.
The everyday collection.
All right, 1510 WMEX. Welcome back to the New England Revolution post-match report on 1510 WMEX, as I just said. Revs, moving on to the MLS Cup Finals. 617-237-1234. Justin Churchill in studio. Cam Bartley in studio. Kev Coleman in studio. Scooby McGay is going to come back in a couple of seconds. I'm Tom Quinlan. Give us a call at 617-237-1234. I saw something come up for Bobby Shuttleworth. We can't get it on the air, unfortunately, though. But, Justin, I'll start with you first. Your overall thoughts on the evolution of Bobby Shuttleworth and the guy that has brought this team because it was a collective effort all around. You know, it's hard to single out one guy, even if that guy's name happens to be Jermaine Freakin' Jones. But Bobby Shuttleworth is a guy that took a lot of crap, a lot of grief this year from people. And he proved people wrong. He stepped up, and not only did he double his win total from last year, he put this team in a championship position. So what is the narrative going to be for Bobby Shuttleworth now?
Eastern Conference final goalkeeper right now. But, I mean, you can't win an MLS championship without good goalkeeping. You look at every team, you have to have a good goalkeeper. You just can't play, you plain can't win. You can't go out there with a mediocre keeper. And, you know, last year, he honestly wasn't there. I'll explain. You know, we talked about it this morning. Long shots were awful. He was awful on long shots. He couldn't parry things away. He gave up pretty bad rebounds. He's really worked on that. He's worked on his positioning when, you know, he has those, you know, odd man rush type situations or situations where he may not need to come out as much as he does. So he has more awareness, positional awareness, I like to put it at. And, you know, he did well tonight, I thought. It wasn't, none of those goals were really his fault. So.
You don't think so? People were kind of hard on him on Twitter. I saw fans that reacted in a negative way, in a way that they used to in the past with Bobby Shuttleworth. You know, why was it that tonight was different when he allowed those goals?
I think tonight the defense let him down.
More so what we talked about before with the defense.
Okay. At least two of those goals were all defensive mistakes. Shutting them down was very difficult for him. So
I think that the first one is Brian, when we went over the four, Brian's thought that spoke to us. He said that the first goal was on Bobby.
Good old Brian.
But honestly, when I look back at it, I still blame that on Jogo. There's no way that you can allow Tim Cahill to chest a ball down inside the 18 and not know where your man is. And Tim Cahill, like we kept saying, kept going off Jogo's back shoulder, his blind shoulder, and he couldn't find him all game. Could not find him once. And Justin's absolutely right. The defense could not find Tim Cahill at all today. And they're going to have to really tighten it up if they want to shut down Giassi Zardes, Landon and Robbie Keane, or the likes of Oba
Ofemi Martins. Yeah. Oh my God, that's going to be crazy.
It's going to be terrible. Or even Robbie Keane as well. So they really need to tighten it up and more communication. That's what's going to create your defense and make it even better. Just, you got to talk more. The communication between AJ and Jogo.
Trust.
It wasn't there. I felt it was lacking, and they were ball watching a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a huge issue. I mean, there was it happened in the first leg. It happened throughout the season. I mean, they're not a perfect team defensively. We welcome in Julian Cardillo, also from New England Soccer Today, colleagues with Justin Churchill, former co-host. Haven't had him on the radio in a while.
Hey.
Happy to have him back. Actually, press that red button. There you go.
Hey.
There we go.
Guys.
So what's your thoughts on the night? We were talking about the defensive performance. We'll start right there. How do the Revs got to fix things up coming in back, going to either L.A. or Seattle?
Actually, I thought in general they were very solid defensively. It was more mental lapse, in my opinion, than actual, you know, defensive shortcomings.
I'm going to disagree with you on that one.
Why do you say that?
Because two of those goals, we were just talking about it. Jogo couldn't man mark. They were ball watching on the cross goal there.
I will say Jogo didn't have his best game. I did think he was the weak link in that defense, which isn't something, you know, we say too often. But at the same time, first goal I definitely put on Jogo. But that second one doesn't happen without that Andrew Farrell misclearance.
Well, I saw three mistakes on that. I saw, honestly, Soares should have muscled more. Farrell should have trapped the ball or kicked it out.
Absolutely.
And
then, that's
and
the
Jogo
one that
should have stepped in.
That's the one. But you know what? The Farrell one was the one that did it.
Yeah, I mean, that probably is the main reason, but the other three, I wasn't impressed with the defense tonight.
The one thing that really frustrated me was that one in the second half where Tim Cahill, after that beautiful ball from Thierry Henry, who swung in a beautiful left foot across, and Jose's literally watching the ball.
Yeah.
And Tim, he started the play, Tim Cahill. Mm. He distributed off to Henry and literally peeled around the back line, And that's what Tim Cahill has done all his life. He's literally invisible inside the 18. Literally invisible. Poaching. You can't find him. He's a poacher.
They almost had the volley of the year. Yeah. That would have been gorgeous.
Yeah.
That
one. And it's just something that they're going to struggle a lot in the championship if they can't figure it out.
Especially against what we were just talking before, the likes of Donovan or Dempsey or Zardes or Obafemi Martins or Keane. Or Xavi Alonso.
We didn't even talk about him. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, talk about
Keane guys more than Zardes. Yeah. Guy who's not in form, you know, talking about Zardes.
There are dangerous pieces all over the place for both teams, whether, you know, depending on whoever New England or New England plays, whether it be L.A. or Seattle. I was about to say New England or New York, but New York is going home currently right now on that train back to down I-95. Moving over to the other series, though, Julian, who do you think's the favorite to come out of tomorrow's game?
It's Seattle because it's at home. You know, this isn't – L.A. isn't unbeatable. I think that the sort of like the literary poetic justice of it all says, you know, the final should be Landon Donovan in his last ever game. You know, absolutely. But you can't mistake the Sounders for just a pushover team. I mean, they've done very well this season. They have a tremendous crowd behind them. I do think that it will be an incredibly tough test for them, but you know, there's no reason why they can't beat the Galaxy 2-0.
So you think they could beat the Galaxy 2-0, New England?
Well, I know I'm talking about. You're talking about the
Seattle.
Seattle-Los Angeles series. Yeah.
I thought the same thing this morning.
I really believe that game could go to PKs, the way that those teams are matched up. It could very well have Seattle just getting a one-goal lead and then them battling it out for the rest of the 90 minutes or whatever minutes are after they score. But then again, also, L.A. is so dangerous, too. Who knows? If they get one goal, Seattle's going to be in a huge hole there.
That wild card in that series, I think, is actually going to be a combination of Seattle's back line and their keeper. I just don't think Stephen Fry is an MLS Cup caliber keeper. I mean, I'm not just because of the performance he had here in New England earlier this summer when he let up 5 goals. I mean, this was the same guy that started on the Toronto, in between Toronto's pipes, that just did not look good, never went to the playoffs. You look at the other side, Jaime Pinedo. Here's a guy who is just not only anchoring the back line, but making that offense count, doing an excellent job. I think that might be Seattle's wild card. And
I think tomorrow night it's going to come down to the back four for both teams. I think whoever, you know, can, you know, hold these, you know, attacking guys that are so dominant in the front, I think that's what it's going to come down to tomorrow night. It's going to be a great game, and like Cam said, I agree with him. I think it's going to come down to either PKs or a goal and, you know, extra time.
Attack versus attack, though.
Right.
Does New England stand as the best team left in the playoffs? I'll start with you, Justin Churchill.
No. I won't. I'll give them credit where credit's due, but I've said all year, Western Conference is stronger. They might battle each other. That's a point we've talked about all year.
They're going to beat the hell out of each other coming to
the MLS Cup final. That might help them. Strongest team, I really think, is Seattle.
I have to agree with Justin. I think it's Seattle, too. You know, they're just so dominant. You know, L.A.'s a dominant team, too. They have a good attack. But I think it's going to be one of those two Western Conference teams.
Well, the issue with New England is they, on paper, they don't really have strikers. They have one striker. It's Charlie Davies. And after this performance tonight, you can bet that whoever's in the final is going to be marking him tight. And New York showed that they can keep an eye on Lee Wynn. Jermaine Jones scores goals, yeah, but he's there to boss the midfield. He's there to be a physical guy. He's not a goal scorer. You look at either Seattle or Los Angeles, I think that's why this series is so exciting, why it's so hard to put your finger on. Because on one side, you know, your starters, Obafemi Martins, Clint Dempsey, you don't need to say much about that. Then you have Giassi Zardes, Robbie Keane, Landon Donovan, Juninho, Marcelo Sarvis. These are all really strong, solid attacking players who, you know, either contribute or score more than 10 goals in a season.
Juninho, I mean, a guy that's waiting to blow off the launching pad, you would have to imagine, right, Julian?
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, not necessarily scoring these goals, but contributing in the aggregate.
In the past, he's been a huge goal-scoring asset for L.A., of course, Juninho.
Yep, absolutely.
I agree with all you guys, especially I think Seattle does have the best front runners right here. They have the best attackers. Second, of course, L.A. That's why they're in the semis, but I'll say it again, the best midfield, I believe, is New England.
I agree.
I believe that New England has the best midfield, anchored by the boss himself, Jermaine Jones. And then, obviously, once Kellen gets involved, too, he'll be in the MLS Cup. He'll be starting, without a doubt. and Lee Nguyen, MV Lee, and Scott Caldwell, the unsung hero,
yeah,
the one that
go.
No one talks
about.
He's phenomenal. And if he gets down on an injury for some reason, knock on wood, he won't. You got Andy Dorman, too, who's a quality player as well, who can step in
and
there.
And Chaz.
Yeah.
And Chaz.
That's what my dream is.
Chaz Daigo.
Chaz Daigo.
Yeah, Chaz Daigo.
Just like you guys said, we're all going to agree that Seattle is definitely the best team in this. I'm not going to be the one guy to say something else off just to say it. You know, it's pretty obvious. And Charlie Davis, in the post game, he said one team they beat 5-0 and the other team they lost 5-1. And, you know, coming into this game, you can use that as momentum. And hopefully this team, with every interview done in there, they talked about the camaraderie that they have. They're all a together team, and every single person just talked about how each one of them keep each other up. And having that type of team chemistry on the New England Revolution, it plays a major role in the game, because I've always said the game is a lot more mental than it is physical. So to have that type of camaraderie on your team, and, you know, they can pull it together and go through – fight adversity a little bit better than other teams they'd be able to do.
That's a good point, Scooby, that you bring up there. Julian, I'll let you get to that point in a second. The only reason why I want to just step in is because, you know, any team that loses eight straight in the middle of the year, it's easy to lose a locker room like that. Jay Heaps, from what I've heard, from what I've been told in the past, supposedly lost the locker room mid-season. Supposedly these guys checked out mentally, did not want anything. This was all before Jermaine Jones came in. This guy checked out. This guy checked out. This guy wants out. You can probably figure out which guys wanted out and which guys wanted to stay. And for some reason, I didn't always believe the rumors that I was hearing. I heard that Jay was a definite out if they would have lost that game to Colorado. That ended that eight straight losing streak. There was a bunch of rumors circulating, but when we talked to Mike Burns in August, I think it was the one thing that they wanted to get back was the consistency. And if you could find that consistency and bring it back, that was the missing piece. That was the missing element. It's just that faith that, you know, we can do this, because that's what those a lot of that team believed, that they, you know, were as good as they were marketed to be. Remember, national writers picked this team to win MLS Cup. National writers, Grant Wall, a name drop on this show, I don't care, said the Revs should win.
I don't know if it should as much as could.
Could. Okay.
Absolutely.
But
could.
Sports Illustrated curse. We all know how that goes.
We all know Grant Wall, too.
We all know Grant Wall, too, that will just throw poop at the wall and see if it sticks. I'm going to say, though, that these guys, I think they knew that they had something special. You know, you made a magical play, and I'm going to use the word magical, playoff run last year, because people didn't expect you to make it in on the last day, on a day where you only win 1-0 in Columbus, a team that has, you know, you have great MLS moments with in the past. Yeah, sure, you get knocked down by Sporting Kansas City, but wasn't this better? Yeah, you didn't get to do it with the legend Matt Reese, but isn't it better that you have the keeper of the future now in Bobby Shuttleworth? You got a guy that's got you 14-plus wins this year. You know, you have a back line that's, okay, 3/4 of it is young, but you know that you'd only need one more center back or an outside back to fix it. Your midfield set, with the exception of what do you do with Jermaine Jones next June, or August, excuse me. And you know what? If Charlie can play the way that Charlie needs to play, you set up top for a couple of years. So there is a system that's built here, and you had the foundations for success.
And another thing is, Patrick Mullins is only going to learn from Charlie Davies.
Oh, gosh, we haven't even talked about the rookies.
But we have a huge issue with what's going to happen with who's going to be protected and who's going to be unprotected in this next expansion draft. Because we've been talking about it all day amongst ourselves in the media here today. They have to keep a certain amount of international spots. They have to keep...
Well, thankfully, they don't have that many occupied.
The thing is, though, that you have to keep, like, Diego's international spot.
Yeah, technically, yeah.
He's an international spot. There's a couple players.
I'd be curious to see how they bend the MLS rules, if they get him in under homegrown or what exactly happens.
You got to remember, Jerry's still in there.
Jerry's on loan, and he still technically counts.
Not going to get protected.
Yeah, but no one's going to pick him. But that's not going to matter, because he's on loan, because no one's going to pick him. But
yeah, he's in Argentina.
There's, I think, Teal Bunbury's on that list, sadly. I think Kellen Rowe may be on that list, too.
Dorman's on that list?
Well, I think Andy Dorman's unprotected. They don't care. I mean, it's not that he's expendable, but
I think a lot of defensive depth is on that list.
Yeah.
You know, some fringe midfield players. Daigo Kobayashi, as much as he's great off the bench, You know, I see him as going in unprotected. Most of the forwards, I mean, I don't think they protect Patrick Mullins.
Yeah, they can't. That's what I was going to say.
Honestly, most of those rookies.
Hopefully they stick around.
I mean, Alex Sundley, we haven't seen much out of him. Donnie Smith.
Gone. They're all gone.
If they're not gone in the expansion draft, they're not going to have their options picked up. This is just something that we see year after year in November, December. And you know, you always want some of these rookies to latch on. It was nice to see Donnie Smith last, longer than we thought. But the reality is that it just, a lot of turnover that happens every year.
They're the core guys that you want to keep here. You want to keep Scott here. I think you want to keep Kellen here.
He gets saved through homegrown, I think.
Scott for now, I think.
Scott does, because he's on the...
Generation Adidas?
Well, it's so weird. It's whatever, so many different roles.
Single entity program.
Some weird roster list that Diego's not on, so yep. Diego isn't protected from it. I don't know why.
Anyway, so if I could go back and make an earlier point, it was essentially that, I am sort of looking forward to the fact that there's going to be an MLS Cup in which pretty much none of the players on this roster were part of the last MLS Cup loss. Because I don't think they're going to have that chip on their shoulder. You know, psychologically, you don't want to have that chip on your shoulder. I can't imagine being, like Taylor
Twellman.
Because it
messed with Jay psychologically.
Maybe, but he's not playing the game. And at
he's
the end,
managing
at,
it, though.
He is, but I think at this point, he knows who his lineup's going to be, barring an injury. He knows who his subs are.
So do you think tonight was just, I wouldn't say it was improvised, but it was a tinker just for the situation of, hey, if we can get through this one more game, Kellen's going to be 100% for next week and Sunday. Let's just cut our losses for one game here.
I think it also has to do with, Thierry Henry being on the field, yep. Matching speed for speed. That has a lot to do with it. I'm just saying, psychologically speaking, I think this team is there. I think it's great that there just isn't that fear of losing, because they've done it, three right. times in a row.
Right.
That doesn't exist right now. And four
times in franchise history.
Four times, yeah, exactly. And I think for these guys, they want to win the first, not lose again.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And also that camaraderie that Scooby was talking about, too. That's going to be a huge factor, yeah.
Thank you, Julian. I'm sorry, Scooby. Real quick, what do you got?
Oh, just how they were in the playoffs last year. A lot of the younger guys got a lot of experience within the playoffs. So I think that's going to play a big role in experience terms as well.
Oh, absolutely. It played a huge role in this playoffs for sure. Thank you very much, Scooby Magueza. Welcome. Cameron Bartley, as always, brother. Julian Cardillo, thank you very much, brother. Kev, Justin, Brad, awesome stuff tonight. The Revs advancing to the MLS Cup Finals for the first time since 2007. It's going to be a hell of a ride in Seattle, LA. We'll see where it is, but we'll find you next time. I'm Tom Quinlan. We'll see you on the podcast this week, people. Peace!